killing at least 40 civilians and raising the genocidal war's death toll to over 44,300. The Syrian army is pressing ahead with its operations to confront and expel foreign-backed terrorists from the country's north and northwestern provinces. Reporters on the ground say the Syrian military, backed by the Russian air support, struck terror groups in the villages of Hazarin and Arakaya in the southern countryside of Idlib province. Airstrikes also targeted the positions of the Nusra Front terror group around Khan Sheikhoun, south of Idlib, and Morek in the northern countryside of Hama. The Syrian military says it has reinforced its defensive lines with various means of fire, personnel and equipment in areas where clashes are underway with the terrorists. It says it confronted and prevented terror groups from making any breaches. The army also says it has managed to secure a number of areas, including Mardis. Clashes between the Syrian army and the terrorists began after the Takfiri groups, including the Nusra Front, launched a surprise attack on northern and northwestern parts of the Arab country on Wednesday.
Tensions in Syria have erupted once again as Aleppo becomes the latest flashpoint in the ongoing war. Turkey-backed militants, along with Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups, launched an all-out attack on the city, shattering a fragile period of relative calm. The Syrian army says Nusra Front terrorists, supported by thousands of foreign mercenaries and accompanied by heavy weapons and drones, launched the attack from multiple fronts. According to the statement, the Syrian army is strengthening its defense lines and is preparing for a counterattack against them. A coalition of groups, including Takfiri and Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists, launched their coordinated attacks on Aleppo and Idlib provinces on Wednesday. Syrian Foreign Minister Bassam Sabah says the attacks come within the framework of serving the goals of the Israeli occupation entity and its sponsors. He pointed to Israel's role in sponsoring terrorist groups such as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham in Syria, noting that Damascus has always warned of the obvious coincidence between the Israeli regime's airstrikes on government-held areas and the subsequent attacks of terrorist groups. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has at times voiced support for anti-Syrian government terrorists. In 2014, he even paid a visit to a field hospital established in occupied Golan Heights to treat wounded militants. Turkey has also played a significant role in supporting these groups. From the beginning of the war, Ankara has been training and arming anti-Damascus groups and provided them with a base for their operations. It later launched direct attack on Syria, which resulted in the occupation of parts of northern Syria that has been going on since August 2016. The war in Syria erupted in 2011. Many believe that the foreign support for anti-Damascus groups has been the main reason why the conflict has not ended yet, after more than a decade. Syria is regarded as the forefront of what has come to be called the axis of resistance against Israel in West Asia. And now it seems that after the failure of the U.S. and Israel in Gaza and Lebanon, they plan to further undermine and destabilize the regional security to cover up further defeats.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says his country could defeat all terrorists and their backers with the help of its friends and allies. Speaking in a phone call with Emirati President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, Bashar al-Assad said the Arab country can defeat and eliminate the terrorists, no matter how intense their terrorist attacks are. During the call, Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed affirmed his country's support for the Syrian state and its fight against terrorism and the establishment of its sovereignty, territorial integrity and stability. Assad also held a phone conversation with Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani. In that conversation, Sudani said Syria's security and stability are closely linked to Iraq's security and play a crucial role in regional security and efforts to establish a stability in West Asia. He stressed Iraq's readiness to provide all necessary support to Syria to confront terrorism and all its organizations. Russia says the Syrian army has killed at least 300 terrorists since Friday night after foreign-backed elements took control of parts of the city of Aleppo in a surprise attack. The Russian Coordination Center in Syria said the Syrian army, with Russian air support, managed to repel terrorist attacks in many places. It said the strikes targeted terrorist gatherings, their command posts, depots and artillery positions in northwestern provinces of Aleppo and Idlib. Clashes between the army and the terrorists began after Takfiri groups launched a multi-front attack on northern parts of the country on Wednesday. The Syrian army says it is preparing for a counter-offensive against terrorists. Ibrahim Wahdi says Syrian and Russian air forces have heavily pounded the armed terrorist positions, not allowing them to enter into the towns of the northern Hama countryside.
Thousands of these terrorists waged this attack, depending on suicide bombers, drones, heavy and medium weapons. Due to the scale of the attack, the Syrian Arab Army had to conduct a strategic redeployment around the city of Aleppo and to the south, extending to Hama northern countryside, because the Syrian Arab Army was facing dealing with these terrorists on a front that extends for over 100 kilometers. And now, as you mentioned, the Syrian, the Syrian Air Forces and the Russian airspace forces also conducted joint airstrikes that targeted these terrorist groups, their PAC supply lines, their headquarters, and their movements, their several positions of these terrorist groups. According to the consulation, the Russian coordination center in Syria, they said that the operation resulted in at least 300 killed terrorists in the past 24 hours, but this makes it 900 or over 900 killed terrorists in total.
A top commander of the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham terror group, also known as Nusra Front, has reportedly been killed in the Syrian city of Idlib. According to media sources, Abu Muhammad al-Jolani was killed in a joint Russia-Syria operation targeting the headquarters of the terrorist group. So far, the Nusra Front has not reacted to the reports. The Takfiri terrorists led by the Nusra Front launched a large-scale attack in Aleppo and Idlib provinces in the northwest of Syria on Wednesday, reportedly seizing several areas. Since then, the Syrian government forces have been engaged in fierce clashes with the terrorists to regain ground. Former U.S. government advisor Paul Lowrady says it's just a matter of time before the terrorists are pushed out of the areas they have recently occupied.
A surprise move by the terrorists, heavily armed by the U.S., and perhaps Israel, to some extent, Turkey. Yes, they can make an incursion. How long they're going to stay depends on the amount of pushback by Syria. It's just a matter of time before they're pushed out. And in fact, you could say it's a matter of time before all the invaders, the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the Turks, the Americans, and the Zionists are pushed out of occupying Syrian land. But as far as the timing and the reason for it, yes, there's an absolute connection with the ceasefire or the truce in Lebanon. And this has to do with the fact that the Israeli military is failing. It's exhausted. It's tired. It has said that it doesn't have enough manpower. And the fact that so many Israelis are actually leaving the country, they're finding another place to live. So it's a time of crisis for Israel.
The Iranian foreign minister says Takfiri terrorists and their sponsors will not achieve anything in Syria.
These groups and their supporters should know that in before the resistance forces and the forces who are fighting for the pride of their country, they will not get anywhere. This has been proven in the past few years.
The top Iranian diplomat said the recent developments in Syria prove that the U.S., Israel and Takfiri terror groups all share the same goals, and this is a historical fact. Rakhchi was speaking in a ceremony to mark the National Navy Day in Iran. He stressed that the diplomatic apparatus and military forces complement one another. Araghchi added, while diplomacy offers a less costly and better way to achieve goals, in fact it relies on domestic power components to move forward. He said enemy threats had peaked in recent months, but Iranian armed forces, including the Navy, frustrated the enemy and ensured the country's security. Iran's parliament speaker says Takfiri terrorist groups in Syria are advancing Israeli interests. Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf called for serious efforts and coordination to safeguard the region in current conditions. He was speaking in a phone call with his Lebanese counterpart Nabi Berri. The top Iranian parliamentarian also hailed the recent ceasefire in Lebanon, but warned against repeated Israeli violations of the agreement. Ghalibaf further underscored Iran's support for the Lebanese government and resistance. For his part, Berri thanked Iran for assisting Lebanon. He said this helped stop a savage predator called Israel from devouring the entire region, including Lebanon. Sunday has been yet another deadly day for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip as the Israeli military continues to pound the blockaded territory with air and artillery strikes. In one of the strikes, at least two children were killed after the Israeli forces shelled the camp of the displaced Palestinians near the southern city of Khan Yunis. Israeli artillery also targeted a group of civilians in the Shabura refugee camp near Rafah, also in South Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli warplanes carried out multiple airstrikes across Gaza, leaving an unknown number of Palestinians dead and injured. On Saturday, at least 40 people were killed in an Israeli air raid targeting a Palestinian home in Jabalia, northern Gaza. The Israeli aggression against Gaza began last October. Since then, more than 44,300 Palestinians have been killed and over 105,000 others injured. Lack of food, water and other basic necessities is also taking its toll on the Gaza population. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has published a video of an Israeli-American captive pleading the US President-elect Donald Trump to secure his release through a captives deal.
Use your influence and the full power of the United States to negotiate for our freedom.
In the video, Eden Alexander slams Benjamin Netanyahu for neglecting the captives and urges Trump not to make the same mistake as former President Joe Biden did. He says that the weapons being sent to the Israeli regime are killing the captives and that the brutal siege on Gaza is starving them. Netanyahu's cabinet has been continuously accused of intentionally rejecting a captives deal with Hamas in order to remain in power ever since the genocidal war on Gaza began in October last year. The Israeli military has once again launched air raids across the occupied West Bank. The highlights were the raid in the cities of Tubas and Jenin. The incursions triggered clashes with Palestinian fighters in some areas, including Jenin. Our correspondent Ramallah Naka Hamad earlier gave us the latest on the situation.
Throughout the hours of the night, the most of the West Bank cities, the Palestinian cities over here in the West Bank, have been under incursions and under Israeli continuous raids. Let's start from the area of Aqaba in the Tubas area, where a large amount of military vehicles and Israeli army soldiers have been firing live ammunition and tear gas bombs. So in the area of Aqaba until now, reportedly five Palestinians have been arrested until this moment, as this is an ongoing event. Also in the area of Beita to the south of Nablus, a heavy incursion has been made to the town of Beita, also to many of the villages of the south of Nablus and Salfit, where reportedly not only the IOF attacked the Palestinian cities and villages, but also the colonial settlers have attacked Palestinian homes, shooting live ammunition. The governance of Jenin has made an announcement that there will be no schools today due to the security situation inside the Jenin governance, as the clashes continue and as the IOF raids continue on and off to many areas of Jenin. We are talking about Qabatia, Mithalat al-Shuhada, and many other areas that the IOF makes regular incursions.
And that is a wrap for this hour's World News. Thank you. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Rai.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners' Special Program on this Sunday, December 1st, 2024. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners' Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the most. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, we've received reception reports as well as emails from around the world. This time, we've received an email from MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta from Bangladesh, as well as a piece of reception report from him. And Haki Puranen from Finland has sent us a piece of email. As for your information, dear listeners, the reception reports are very helpful to IRIB English Radio, especially to our engineers and technicians, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service for our listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in reception reports will be receiving a piece of EQSL or electronic QSL from us. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. And in this edition of Listeners' Special Program, we are going to delve into the Grand Bazaar of Kerman. As you may know, the city of Kerman, or Kerman province, is located in southern Iran. The Grand Bazaar of Kerman, considered one of the city's most important attractions, is an attractive world full of amazing things. Together, we are going to learn about different parts of this bazaar and have a look at its history and also the ways to access it. Kerman Grand Bazaar is a historical market that starts from Arg Square and extends to Mirza Reza Kermani Street. Actually, this bazaar is a straight line that has two entrances, the Arg Gate and the Mosque Gate, which in the past were the gates of the city. Kerman Bazaar is known as the largest bazaar in Iran. When you enter it, you will experience a journey through 600 years of history, and you will be in the local and charming atmosphere of the city. As well, you have the opportunity to buy goods, including souvenirs and high-quality handicrafts. Most of the bazaar was built from the 8th century onwards and during the time of different rulers. In each part of this bazaar, you can see a different manifestation of Iranian Islamic art and architecture and face a very different atmosphere. This is one of the most important historical and commercial centers of Kerman. Moreover, you can visit more than 60% of the city's historical attractions there. Interestingly, the name of this valuable monument is in the list of the National Heritage of Iran since May 25, 2018. And one of the main reasons is its unique architectural features, including the many sites it has embraced. Later during the program, I will talk more about this grand bazaar. Well, here we've received a piece of email from MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta from Bangladesh, one of our old and regular listeners. MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta says, wishing a happy new year 2025. Please send calendar of 2025. Please send diary of 2025. First of all, salam and warm greetings to MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta from Bangladesh. Thank you very much for writing this message of happy new year 2025. For your information, dear listeners, we in Iran do not celebrate the new year in winter. Rather, we celebrate the new year at the start, at the first day of spring, on Farvardin 1st. And we call it Nowruz. You've heard about it a lot. Nowruz, yes, it means new year. Anyway, we wish a happy new year 2025 to you, MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta, and to all our listeners who live in countries that celebrate New Year in winter. Anyway, we actually wish a happy New Year 2025 to MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta and to all our listeners that celebrate the year 2025. Those of you who live in countries that celebrate New Year 2025, actually, we wish you all the best, and we wish that peace prevails all over the world, especially in the Gaza Strip. MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta from Bangladesh, many thanks for writing to us. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you a happy new year. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. After a short break, I will be back with you. This is Listeners Special, and we were talking about the Grand Bazaar of Kerman. This market has long been a trading place for cloth, handicrafts, and copper vessels. Kerman Bazaar is known as the most important distributor of spices in the southeast of Iran. So, you can find everything from the famous Kerman cumin to hot Indian spices in this market. Sarcheshme copper mine is only 50 kilometers from Rafsanjan, so it has made the line of copper miners in the Kerman market to be particularly famous. You can find Kerman's special souvenirs and sweets such as kolompe in abundance in this market. And its Ataran Bazaar is also famous for its supply of high-quality herbal medicines and herbs. Kerman Grand Bazaar, like any other historical and important bazaar, has different parts, each of which is defined based on the profession or type of architecture, etc. Before entering into this discussion and explaining the important parts of the Kerman market, let's take a general look at the structure of traditional Iranian bazaars. In general, the main structural elements of the traditional Iranian bazaars that you can see in Kerman Bazaar as well include raste or passage, the main and sub-passage of the bazaar, which is a long route and there are shops on both sides of it. You can imagine. Then we have Sara. Sara is a middle courtyard with interconnected cells around it. These structures differ in the number of floors, the type of porch, portico, and corridors. And then we have timche, which is a small and covered space for the supply of a specific type of product that has impressive decorations compared to other parts of the bazaar. And the fourth, we have Charsu or Charsuq, that is an intersection of two main streets that have different architecture and detailed interior decorations, and it is called Charsu. Well, after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Hi, Kipuranen from Finland. One of our old and regular listeners has sent us a piece of email. Hi, Kipuranen says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, thank you for the EQSL. I have to check the websites you mentioned in your email, Hi, Kipuranen." First of all, salam and warm greetings to Hi, Kipuranen from Finland. And thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio and listeners, a special program. We mentioned the address of the new website of IRIB English Radio in the previous email. You can check it. You can check the archive of our programs, and you can listen to the online actually broadcast of IRIB English Radio in the website I mentioned in the email. Anyway, please accept our new EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We wish you all the best. Hi, Kipuranen from Finland. Of course, the Grand Bazaar of Kerman is so wonderful and amazing that cannot be described in a brief radio program. But briefly, I can mention some of the different parts of the Kerman Grand Bazaar, which include Ganj Ali Khan Bazaar, Ganj Ali Khan Caravan Sarai, Ganj Ali Khan Mosque, Ganj Ali Khan Bathhouse, Ganj Ali Khan Charsuq, Arg Bazaar, Ikhtiari Bazaar, and Vakil Bazaar and Vakil Complex. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio and listeners, a special program here. We've come to the end of this radio program. Many thanks for being with us. But before saying goodbye to you, I just wanted to send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to MD Anwar Iqbal Mukta from Bangladesh and Heike Pranen from Finland. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and listeners, a special program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Heavy fighting is going on between the Syrian army and foreign-backed terrorists near the northwestern city of Aleppo. Reports say terrorists have taken control of several areas, including a major highway near the city. The Syrian army says it has sent reinforcements there and is repelling the attack. A coalition of terrorist groups also launched a new offensive on Wednesday. Iran says the resurgence of terrorist groups in Syria is a U.S.-Israeli plan following the Tel Aviv regime's defeats in Lebanon and Palestine. Russia has also slammed the terrorist offensives, calling for efforts to prevent the spread of terrorism across the region. Our guests for Spotlight are Professor of Political Science at Birzeit University, Saad Nimr, joining us from Ramallah. And we also have security and political analyst Ali Riz joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Professor Nimr in Ramallah. Intense clashes are ongoing in and around Aleppo between the Syrian armed forces and terrorist groups, mainly the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, formerly known as the al-Nusra Front. Now, that name obviously rings a bell. The Syrian army has also managed to halt the advance of terrorists in Idlib. How do you perceive the timing of this flare-up of violence in Syria?
Good evening to you, your guest from Beirut, and for all your viewers. Well, I think this goes with the plans of Netanyahu on the one hand, and definitely the defeat of the Israelis in the war in Lebanon they couldn't achieve anything. Now, the whole thing in the mind of Netanyahu is Syria, and why Syria today? Because Syria is the connection between Iran and Lebanon. And since he was talking all the time about, you know, depriving Hezbollah from its power, and he was targeting even all the crossings between Lebanon and Syria during the war, it means that he wants to cut off this kind of relation and this connection with Iran, which is coming through Syria. So now it's about time also from the Israeli perspective to make Syria, you know, being involved in this new actions with these terrorists. And they, you know, they move them whenever they want. So they want to make sure that Syria is on a situation of depleted, if you like, and fatigue, so they can't even respond in any way if they targeted any kind of the roads or highways which connecting, you know, Lebanon with Syria, as well as, you know, try to say or to send a message to the Syrians that don't continue to receive all this help from Iran to the resistance in Lebanon. And that's why now they are creating these problems to Syria. It's a kind of a pressurizing Syria that we can, whenever we want, you know, create some troubles to you in Syria. And we can do that whenever we want, because you are helping Hezbollah and you are helping the Iranian from their point of view.
Ali Rizk in Beirut. Takfiri terrorists led by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham launched large-scale attacks in the northwest of Syria on Wednesday, the exact same day of a ceasefire in Lebanon. Also, four large-scale offensives launched from the city of Anadan, that's north of Aleppo, were also foiled on Thursday. Talk to us about the timing here. An analyst that we spoke to earlier believes that the resurgence of terrorist groups in Syria is no coincidence.
Well, I think that, first of all, the Israelis do have a history of collaborating with extremists. This happened in about 2015, if I'm not mistaken, during the events which were unfolding in Syria. The Israelis did coordinate with al-Nusra, and the Israeli former ambassador to Washington, Michael Oren, he had some interesting statements back then. He said that we prefer the bad guys who were not backed by Tehran, to the bad guys who were backed by Tehran. What his statements meant was that Israel prefers Al-Qaeda and other extremists to the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and to the Syrian leadership. And the main reason for that is, as your guests just mentioned, Syria under the leadership of Hafez al-Assad and also Bashar al-Assad has been a major, major player in the axis of resistance. So I think it's clear where the Israeli wishes lie, and they've backed those preferences with action. As I said, before these latest events, before these latest attacks took place, Netanyahu also issued some threats against Syria, as did some other senior Israeli officials. So I think there's no doubt that the Israelis appear to have some kind of role in what was taken, in what took place.
Professor Nim, about the response to these events in Syria, Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, he has called the resurgence of Takfiri terrorism in northern Syria the outcome of an American-Israeli project, highlighting that the recent development follows the Israeli regime's defeats against the resistance in Lebanon and the Palestinian territories. Talk to us about those comments coming from the Iranian foreign minister. Do you see the situation in that light as well?
Yeah, that's quite obvious. Yani, when we are talking about the relationship between Israel and the United States and these kind of terrorist organizations, whether it's al-Nusra or even Daesh, it's quite clear. And I do agree with your guest, Ali. I do remember that al-Nusra members, when they were injured in the war in Syria, south of Syria, they were treated in the Israeli hospitals. And Netanyahu himself, and there is a video for that, was visiting them while they are in their beds. So Back to the issue in Syria, yes, it is because of the Lebanese and Hezbollah winning this war, and Israel couldn't achieve anything. They want to apply this pressure. And I think that now Iran knows that this kind of war against Syria and this troubles that they are creating for Syria now, it concerns them quite you know, well. Because now, apparently, the Israelis are focusing more and more on the Iranian, in everything. They wanted to prevent Iran from coming to Syria or to Syria to help Lebanon and so on. And all the time they are blaming Syria for blaming Iran for anything is happening. Even today, they were talking about, you know, Iranian weapon and Iranian ammunition, which they catch 2 days ago, and they said this is from Iran coming to the Palestinian resistance. And at the same time, today, the operation that happened today, they said this is the result of the Iranian support to the Palestinian resistance. So they are trying to involve Iran in a way or another, and that goes along with the ideas of Netanyahu of a new Middle East. So I still believe that the Israeli are trying to seize any moment in order to do a hit to against Iran and to get the Americans to be involved in yet a larger war in the region.
Mr. Rizk, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei has said that Tehran considers the reactivation of terrorist groups in Syria part of a plan by Israel and the U.S. to destabilize West Asia. Do you see this as a continuation of those destabilizing actions and violence that we've been seeing since the genocide in Gaza started last year?
I think that this can't be separated from the statements which Netanyahu made when he announced that Israel had agreed to the ceasefire on the Lebanese front. If you recall that speech, he said that one of the reasons behind this decision was to focus the resources on Iran. And I think that the events in Syria are part of that, are part of the efforts to focus the resources on Iran, because they believe that by weakening Syria, you're also in one way weakening the Iranians. I think that is Netanyahu's plan. And incidentally, I do agree with your guest that the ultimate plan, the ultimate Israeli strategy, is to drag the United States into some kind of a confrontation with Iran, not necessarily, by the way, by full-scale war. I think that the Israelis now have reached the conclusion that the Americans won't go along with them in a full-scale war. What they're advocating now, for example, people like Mark Dubowitz, who is from the Foundation of the Defense of Democracies, a very anti-Iranian think tank, he's said to be advising, by the way, President-elect Trump. They're advocating cyber activities, different kinds of methods to destabilize Iran without reaching that threshold of launching an all-out war in Iran. So again, I think that what's happening in Syria can't be separated from that grander plan, that broader plan. But ironically, there are two points. Number one, Russia. What's Russia's stance? Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, by the way, he was in Moscow just recently. How is Russia going to react to that, to these kinds of steps? And also, President Trump, President-elect Trump, what's his position going to be? Is he going to be supportive of a takfiri awakening, if you would like, in Syria? Because if you recall, in Trump's first term, he spoke about the necessity of confronting what he termed to be radical Islamic terror. That were the words he used. Of course, he was, you know, his own team sabotaged his efforts to some extent. Will it be different? Will President-elect Trump take a different path, or will he also be dragged along with the deep state in supporting these efforts in Syria, these destabilization efforts? I think these are all developments, or these are all issues we have to keep an eye on, particularly how Russian-US ties are to evolve. Will that lead to the direction of stabilization, or will it lead to destabilization? For example, should Trump's efforts to reach some kind of a rapprochement with President Putin if they're sabotaged. So there are, a lot of dynamics involved, but I believe that Russia in particular, that could be a big obstacle to Netanyahu's gambles in Syria and the wider region.
Professor Nimr, our guest in Beirut, Mr. Ritz, just brought up the issue of Russia. That's exactly where I was going next. Russia has also slammed the terrorist attacks in Syria as a violation of the Arab countries' sovereignty. The Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, described the terrorist onslaught as an attack on Syria's sovereignty in those words. Where does Russia fit in this equation, in your opinion? Because Moscow has made it clear it won't tolerate this flare-up in Syria, because Russian and Syrian warplanes, they bombed terrorist-held areas in northwest Syria near the border with Turkey on Thursday to push back this offensive.
Well, yes, we have to understand something, that Russia is committed with the Syrian government and with Bashar al-Assad, and they don't want any changes in the regime. Definitely, there is some mutual interest between the two countries, and especially the Russian, they have the only base in the Mediterranean, which in Latakia. So definitely they wanted the regime to continue, and they wanted, you know, Syria to be intact, and they helped so far. Now, to what extent? And so they are committed. This is something that we are agreed to. Now, the second thing, the second issue, to what extent they are, you know, willing to go. If it is against this kind of organization, terrorist organization, whether it's Nusra or Daesh or any kind of terrorist organizations, I think they will be involved and they will try to help the Syrian as much as they can, and especially by their air force. But if that goes further, and to what extent goes further, I don't think that the Americans is going to, they are already, and the Israeli, they are already helping Nusra and Daesh. That's with no doubts. But they won't dare to announce it, you know, officially, and to start, you know, helping them openly to say this is, you know, something that they are helping the terrorist organizations. They are not going to do that. But definitely, they are behind it somehow. And the other question is how this, you know, help came to these kind of countries, these organizations, through whom? All the news now is talking about they were coming from Turkey. So to what extent also that would, you know, make the Russian involved in a wider circle, and to what extent they are going to do it? Now, I think there is also a kind of an understanding between Russia and Israel about some certain issues, and about, you know, even the airstrikes sometimes by the Israelis, though the Russian, they do have the ability to defend the air in Syria, because they have the S-400 and more than that of missiles that they could prevent Israel of having any kind of air activities above Syria. But to what extent they are willing now, if they know the intentions of Israel in Syria, to what extent they are willing really to defend Syria, and in which way? So this is, you know, we have to see and watch, but I believe that it's in their best interest to keep Syria and to keep the regime and to keep Bashar al-Assad in Syria, because that's in their own best interest as well.
Mr. Rizk, Iran, via its foreign ministry, has referred to the international community's responsibility to prevent and fight against the quote-unquote ominous phenomenon of terrorism. There's clear hypocrisy and double standard regarding the term terrorism, specifically from the U.S. and some of its key Western allies, as to who is categorized as a terrorist and how they should be dealt with. Unpack that for us, please.
Well, I think that Israel, first and foremost, has a big influence on who they categorize as who are terrorists. I'll give you an example. Let's not go too far. Here in Lebanon, Hezbollah. Hezbollah has not carried out any kind of terrorist operation against any Western country, for example. There have been no signs or no such developments. Those that have carried out attacks against Western countries are indeed the same terrorist groups who the Syrian government is fighting. Al-Qaeda, ISIS, other groups. The reason why the West also chooses to designate Hezbollah and, for example, Hamas as terrorist organizations has nothing to do with Western national security. It's, I think, to satisfy the Israeli wishes. And the Israelis even wanted to go further. For example, I heard from one well-informed figure in Washington once that one of the complaints many of the Israelis used to make, and this goes back to the Obama administration, they used to say to the American officials back then, you're focusing too much on the Al-Qaeda type, that's according to what I was told, not giving as much attention to the quote-unquote Iranian-backed terrorism. You know, they were referring to Iran, Hezbollah. So the Israelis, despite the West giving them what they want to a large degree, the Israelis want even more. So we must not underestimate, in my view, how much Israel steers and influences the broader Western policy towards the region, and I think often in a way which backfires against Western interests. I don't think that the West, I'm speaking about the West interests here, I don't think that they have an interest in the Takfiri threat growing, because that could mean a grave danger, particularly to Europe, which is quite close. And we saw what happened in Europe, for example, in 2015, the attacks which were carried out by Al-Qaeda, also other attacks in Belgium, even the United States in San Bernardino and Orlando, it wasn't spared as well. So, yes, the West does practice double standards. I think this is because of its favoritism towards Israel. And at the same time, it doesn't help you. It doesn't help Western interests, which is ironic, in my view.
Professor Nimmer, about that hypocrisy that we were just talking about, and as also alluded to by Mr. Risk earlier, back in the peak of the war on Syria, there was documented support for the terrorists by the Israelis and the U.S. as well. Damascus has always talked about a close coordination between terror groups in Syria and the Israelis. Over the years, there has also been numerous reports about the infiltration of Daesh elements from Syria into Iraq under the protection and logistical assistance of U.S. troops.
Yeah, everyone knows that now. And we have so many evidence that Daesh was created by the Americans, by the CIA, and they know exactly what they are doing. They allow them to do some actions here and there, but as far as their main target is Syria and Iraq, it will be exactly why they were created. Now, at this moment, we go back to Syria and the focus on Syria, again, because it's the link between the Lebanese and Palestinian resistance with Iran. So that's why they are now going there. Now, the hypocrisy of the Western, it's not only in this issue. We know that, you know, especially over the last year after this war, the genocidal war in Gaza and later on in Lebanon, we are talking about, you know, a hypocrisy which is really, you know, disgusting, if I can use this word. It's quite clear, talking about, you know, all these kind of statements that they are giving, usually about human rights and about, you know, humanity and all that. But when it comes to the Palestinians or to the Lebanese or to the Arabs in general, then they show the other face. So the hypocrisy is there. They are not interested in doing anything against that. To the contrary, maybe they will keep silent about what's going on in Syria, because at the same time, they don't like the Syrian regime, and they consider the Syrian regime is also supporting terrorist organizations, as they try to, mark now. Who's the terrorist and who's not the terrorist? This is a big issue. Since the 9/11, there was a call for a conference to identify what do we mean in terrorism and fighting terrorism, especially after Bush's speech talking about, you know, an open war or, as he said, a crusader war against terrorism. So they wanted to know what kind of terrorism that we are going to fight. And we need a conference to identify and to know exactly what kind of terrorism. The one who refused this kind of conference was the United States and Israel. Because in this case, the issues of people under occupation have the right to fight back or not. So we can define in this case what kind of terrorism. And in this case, neither the Palestinian or the Lebanese organizations will be considered as terrorists. And to the contrary, also, countries might be also labeled as terrorism. And in this case, it will be Israel for the action that they are doing all around, not only in the region. But definitely, that's why Israel and the Americans, they refuse to identify what do they mean by terrorism. And that will give them the open hand to do whatever they want in everywhere. And that's, you know, was reflected on the Europeans, who kept silent even about this kind of issue. And here the double standard is quite clear, that the issues which is in the interest of Israel and the Americans, they will go with it. If it is against, then they will be told not to even condemn.
Mr. Rizk, how would you describe the U.S.'s duplicitous stance regarding all that has happened in the region, in the West Asia region, over the past year? It claims it doesn't want a broader regional escalation. It portrays itself as an advocate for ceasefires and cessation of hostilities, but at the same time, it pumps money and weapons into the Israeli war machine while they use it to murder women and children and continue to destroy homes and hospitals and etc.
I think that the Americans have allowed themselves to be taken hostage by the Israelis and by the Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu has been calling the shots, and yes, you're right, the Americans continue to provide all forms of support, different financial, military support, political cover by using the veto in the Security Council. And I think that basically the United States has become addicted to its policy in the Middle East, being largely under the influence of the Israeli side. Of course, in this case, after Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, it's become particularly clear. And I think that U.S. President Joe Biden has actually humiliated the United States by revealing himself to be a tool, or some kind of a tool that can be manipulated and used by Netanyahu as the way Netanyahu wishes. I think that explains the U.S. duplicity, and it exposes the United States. It exposes it as exercising double standards. I don't think it helps the U.S. in any way whatsoever, this outright support for the Israelis. But I think that there's ideological support from Washington. They still have this kind of belief, which I can't explain why, that Israel is a natural ally and they continue to support it. And there's also the domestic costs, whereby U.S. politicians think that should they abstain or should they change their level of support for Israel, this might cost them domestically, for example, in losing the elections.
All right, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. Thanks to Professor Saad Nim joining us from Ramallah, and also security and political analyst Ali Rizk joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah, assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say in front of it?
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the most important Islamic teachings and concepts. I am Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Brother Alavian. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Brother Alavian, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's episode of the program, The Teacher, we want to talk about Al-Hub wal-Bughs regarding the religion of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, and Ahlul Bayt in general. What does it mean in order to associate yourself with the lovers of Ahlul Bayt and disassociate yourself with the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt and Islam? Brother Alavian, let's start with you. What does these two terms mean, al-hub al-bughd? What does it mean?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad and his purified progeny. Hub and bughd, that is love and hate, are among the Islamic teachings that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala actually taught us that our religion is based on these two elements. What do they mean? Hub means love and bughd means hate. We want to say that we are the lovers of the friends of Allah and the lovers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, lovers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala first, and lovers of those who love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that is the lovers of friends of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we show a hatred towards the enemies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And whoever actually hates the lovers